Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Reno Whites. My name's Connor McQuivy. I'm your host as always. Thank you so much for tuning in. This week on the show, we are talking education. I've done several education episodes in the past with former members of our Washoe County School Board, with the president of the Washoe Education Association Union, and today we're talking about career and technical education. Josh Hartsock is the director of career and technical education and the Signature Academies at the Washoe County School District. You might have previously known this as vocational education, think things like auto shop or wood shop, but career and technical education has really expanded in the years since I went to high school, for sure. On this episode, we talk about what that looks like in our current schools. There's also the Signature Academy. Several of our schools have kind of a branding for specific focuses or areas in career education. We talked about the difference of preparing students for the workforce directly or preparing them for college. Some of these career and technical education paths aren't really intended for straight to the workforce, but kind of preparing students for careers that might involve a lot more education. It's just a little more specific focus while they're in high school. It was great to learn about what is happening in our schools. Again, there's always conversation about how our schools are operating, what kind of education our students are getting. Nevada is traditionally known for being a little underfunded when it comes to education. We talked about that as well, how career and technical education is funded, how priorities are determined in what we want to spend money on. Really interesting stuff, and I'm so grateful that Josh took the time to come on the show. We're just about halfway through the season of Reno Whites. I have some really fantastic guests still on the way in the coming weeks. If you're enjoying this season, if you appreciate the work that I'm doing on this podcast, you can help make it financially sustainable. I have an account on Patreon. Patreon is a website that lets people support creators directly. So that's musicians, artists, podcasters, whatever. You can support this show directly financially by going to patreon.com/renowhites. I try my hardest to keep the show independent, free of ads and sponsors. And the only way that it can continue to exist and be financially sustainable is with contributions from people just like you. Thank you so much to my current patrons, the people who have been contributing to make this show financially sustainable, some of them for years. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. Every dollar that you contribute to the show goes directly to helping more people find the show, to helping it be produced. Thank you to my new patrons. A handful of people have signed up just in the last couple weeks. Thank you to Brian. Thank you, Sheila. Again, if you want to support this show, it's very easy to do so for as little as a few dollars a month. $3 a month is about a dollar an episode. Again, that's patreon.com/renowhites. If you have feedback, suggestions, ideas, want to get in touch, you can email me. My address is Connor, C-O-N-O-R, at renowhites.com. And follow me on social media. I'm on Facebook and Instagram at renowhites. And now this week's guest from the Washoe County School District, Josh Hartsock. Josh Hartsock, Director of the Career and Technical Education and Signature Academies at Washoe County School District. Welcome to Renoites.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Good to have you on the show. I am planning an episode in the future with more education guests, and there's a lot going on in the school district right now.
Yes, definitely.
And you were recommended as a guest to talk about the career and technical piece of our education system, because that's I don't want to say brand new, but kind of a emerging area of our education system, I think. I don't remember a lot of career and technical education when I was in high school.
Yeah.
But now it's a big thing. You got a lot of students who are geared more towards careers and you know, just a different way of focusing, I guess, what they're doing in school and building programs around it, right?
Correct. Yeah. We've definitely been around for a very long time, but our profile continues to expand as there's obviously more of an emphasis on preparing students for careers across schools.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit just about what the career and technical education is and what that means?
Yeah. So really, I think what most people of a certain age are going to recall CTE as being, as we call it, CTE. Typically, you might remember voc ed or vocational education back in the day, especially back in the 80s, and I'd say probably the 90s as well. You had things like wood shop and auto shop and metalworking and kind of those more shop type classes. Around 2006, there was a rebrand from vocational education to career technical education that came about from the federal government that decided it was time for a redub and to really focus on preparing students for a wider variety of careers across especially high school. There is CTE in post-secondary, there's CTE at the college level, and there's a little bit of CTE at the middle school level, but really when we talk about CTE, obviously, in the Washoe County School District, we're mainly talking about high school.
Mm-hmm. What is your role as the director of the CTE programs?
So I oversee a small but mighty department of administrative and leadership personnel that are then charged with supporting all of our various CTE programs across primarily our 12 comprehensive high schools in the school district. So we have 11 more traditional high schools. Those would be schools like Galena, Damani, Incline, Hug, North Valleys. And then we also have a specialized CTE school or career technical academy in the Washoe County School District called the Academy of Arts, Careers, and Technology, or AACT. And they're all CTE all the time. They're all focused on CTE.
Gotcha.
So, and then our department also supports, to a certain extent, our public-sponsored charter schools. We have the Academy for Career Education. They're primarily focused on the building trades. And then we also support, again, to a small degree, Coral Academy, their high school. They have a few CTE programs there as well. Mm-hmm. But really what that means is administering funds, especially CTE pretty much runs to a large extent, not exclusively, but CTE pretty much runs to a large extent off of state and federal grants. So our department applies for those grants, administers those grants, makes sure that we're following through on outcomes, that we're accountable to the federal government, especially, and to the state government. Mm. And then a lot of what we do is also providing curriculum support to our teachers. We have about 100 CTE teachers across the school district. Many of them have varying levels of experience working in the classroom. Many of them come to us from what's called a business and industry background. So this might be like a second or a third career for them. So when they make that pivot and they come into the classroom, they need a lot of support. They know how to be a professional in a typical workplace, but in terms of working with kids, and teaching them and educating them and working with especially students from diverse backgrounds and diverse learning styles, that requires a hefty amount of support. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of support that's provided at the school level, but there's things that they just need that we can provide through our office, especially speaking to that curriculum piece. And then there's also a lot that we do to support facilities and equipment. CTE programs are pretty resource intensive, as you might be able to guess,
yeah,
ranging from computers to welders to routing machines to milling machines, you name it. There's a lot of different equipment that goes into CTE programs. Mm-hmm. So to have all of that coordinated effort run through our office is really, really important. And it's a lot of the work that we do, either making sure that we're supporting our programs with what they need, or oftentimes just removing outdated equipment as well, because it's pretty important to stay ahead of the curve with making sure that our programs are up to date.
Oh yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
When you look at the difference between preparing students for college and for careers. Mm. I know the description on the website is for and or, you know, college, yeah, and or careers, mm-hmm, but there seems to be a potential like different path or different priorities or different way of working with students who are going one way or the other. Not that there's, you know, you can't do both, mm-hmm, but can you talk a little bit about the difference in what it looks like for students who you are preparing for college and students who are you preparing directly into the workforce?
Certainly. So I would just like to take a moment to address the narrative that is continually put forth that school systems tend to only focus on college. And that's something that absolutely we don't do in the Washoe County School District. We are a school district of many different pathways, many different options for students once they graduate. And it's actually the same in CTE. Sometimes CTE gets put in the middle as an antidote to that message of college only, when really CTE is a very large umbrella. It's a very big tent. We have programs, especially in our health sciences division, that to enter many of these types of careers after you graduate from the programs, you're either looking at least some kind of a certification, all the way up to a master's, if not a doctorate. And then we have other programs that prepare students for careers that prepare them for a living wage, where oftentimes they might only require, at least to begin with, they might only require an industry recognized credential or a 2-year degree at a community college. So it's really important when we consider what CTE has to offer and what it prepares students for and what it's really trying to appeal to students to get ready for. It's a lot of different options. I'd say one of the key example of that is we just redubbed, this is getting in the weeds a little bit, but one of the things that we did was we redubbed our family education events. They used to be called Passport events, Passport to High School Success. Mm-hmm. And we renamed that Pathway Nights, because really we want to focus on the idea that there's multiple paths for students available once they come out of our programs.
How do you define, or how do you think of skilled careers, right? Because you talk a lot about kind of skilled careers and skilled labor versus unskilled labor. I don't think there's really any such thing as unskilled labor, right?
I would agree.
So how do you define kind of skilled labor? What goes into seeing a career as something that needs specific training or specific education that you provide?
So in CTE, we have kind of a three-legged stool. So when we're talking about equipping kids with skills, or students, I should say, the first set of skills are those more technical skills that people tend to think of, rightly so, when they think of CTE. So you have a welding technology program. Obviously, they're learning various methods of welding and fabrication. You have a sports medicine program. They're learning different ways to tape injured people's ankles or how to address their injury needs. So those are the technical skills. Something that's just as important across all of our CTE programs is often referred to as soft skills. The state defines them as workplace readiness skills. There's actually a set of standardized workplace readiness skills across the state of Nevada that every single one of our CTE programs is meant to highlight and support and reinforce. In our department, for our purposes, we just call them professional skills. We feel like that kind of more anchors the students towards what they're going towards to be a professional. And then the third set of skills would be those core academic skills, mainly math, science, and language arts, English language arts. So when we talk about those three different pillars, in terms of CTE, every single one of our students who goes through a program, obviously those technical skills are up front and center. Most of our CTE programs have gone to two-year formats. So a student, in order to be able to successfully complete the program, they take 2 years. And at the end of that program, they take a technical skill assessment. That assesses their proficiency and their technical skills that they should have learned in that program. Right along with that, they also have to actually take another assessment. It's called the Workplace Readiness Skills Assessment. It's the same assessment for every student, regardless of whatever program they're in. But that is something that we really try to highlight and are trying to continually reinforce across our programs, is that we don't just want our students to learn how to weld. We don't just want them to learn how to code. We don't just want them to learn how to prepare a commercially, a commercially viable meal. We're looking for them to understand how to conduct themselves as professionals in the workplace. And there's various ways that we're trying to do that, but that's something that I'm particularly excited about. And it's something that we consistently hear when we talk to business and industry is, if you give me a student, if you give me somebody from the community, if they can show me their resume and they can apply and they can come to work on time, that's great. What I really need them to do is I can train them. I can teach them more technical skills once they're with us. I really need them to understand how to conduct themselves like a professional and what it means to work with people from various backgrounds and various age groups, especially. So that's something that we really try to highlight in our programs.
Yeah. Is this usually juniors and seniors?
No. Typically it's freshmen. It's anywhere from freshmen to seniors who are able to take a class. I shouldn't say seniors. We really want them to take junior year at the latest, because that'll give them time to complete a program. Mm. It's gotten a lot better in recent years. It has been a transitionary period and it's required a lot of different questions to be answered. But most of our programs used to be 3 years in length, and the majority of them now have dropped down to two, so that a student can start as late as 11th grade and still be able to complete a program. But we're all about trying to push students to start as early as possible, because if you start a program as a freshman, you could potentially start a whole nother program as a junior. Away having completed two programs. Several of our students have completed anywhere from 2 to 3 programs by the time they graduate.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to ask about kind of the ability. Like, I've changed careers many times in my life. I think most college graduates don't necessarily work in what they studied in college. Mm-hmm. So when I hear about kind of career focused training, it makes me worry a little bit. What if you study something that you're trained on something and then it ends up being the thing that you don't want to do or don't end up doing. Mm-hmm. So it's good to hear that people, students can do multiple programs, right? Can you talk a little bit more about the breadth of education in these programs compared to being focused on just like one specific job or career?
Yeah. And I would say, first off, one of the biggest wins that we can take away from our students when they go through our programs is when our students come back and tell us, I took that program and I hated it. For us, that's a win, because you didn't have to go to college and you didn't have to work X amount of your years in a career that you hated to learn that you wanted to do something new. So anytime we can have a student explore, which is really one of the best things that we can provide, is that career exploration piece. Not just preparing students to go into a career as soon as they graduate high school, but really giving them a sandbox to kind of play in and try out new things and discover things that they don't like we definitely take that as a win.
Mm-hmm.
You had a question about the breadth of our programs across the school district. So we have 6 big buckets that we classify our programs by. There's actually 16 different federal career clusters, which is kind of the official way of dividing our programs. I don't do that because I can't remember 16 different classifications. But in terms of the 6 bigger, broader buckets that we have agriculture and natural resources. We have business and management. We have hospitality and human services. We have skilled and technical sciences. And I'm always going to forget the we have health and public safety. And then we have one more. And if there's a teacher who teaches that, I'm going to forget. It'll occur to me at some point. Yeah. But basically, across all of our 12 comprehensive high schools, we have programs that range from multimedia communications and graphic design to computer science and cybersecurity to sports medicine and biomedical to welding technology and automotive technology to engineering that's focused on aerospace to engineering that's focused on civil engineering. This year alone, we brought on 2 new programs. We brought on a fire science program.
Oh, okay.
Which teaches students about not just structural fires, but wildland fires. I mean, it's a pretty amazing program. And then we also brought on a forensic science program as well. So all that is to say, there's very few career fields that we are not currently offering options in. It's a pretty wide breadth.
Yeah.
And then when we get into signature academies, we'll talk about how those are kind of further demarcated by our various schools. But we have a lot of options.
Yeah. Is providing all those options something that you find students are more engaged and interested in school? Because I think that in the past, you know, school just was school. And then hearing you describe all of these different paths and all of these different things, like, I don't remember any of that being an option at all. Mm-hmm. So do you find that students who maybe aren't into just, you know, reading, writing, and math, finding that, oh, school is actually interesting when I'm doing something that is different and not just, you know, basic classroom stuff that their parents and grandparents and great-grandparents did?
Absolutely. So what we've heard, especially from people, maybe not surprisingly enough, but when we are out in the community and we're dealing with people who've been working in industry for a while, oftentimes they will recall being in that shop class or that construction class and that class inspiring them to persist, especially when their path might have taken a shaky turn here and there. And they'll tell us, oh, CTE, back in my day, it was Voc Ed, and it was the thing that kept me in school. If it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be managing a construction site or working in an auto shop. So it's really heartening to hear those kinds of stories. But then on the flip side, we also hear students consistently tell us that they love the classes that they go to. We have teachers who will tell us that their class is oftentimes the reason why a student comes to school. And they really love being that kind of home base for that student and that place where they feel like, you know, not all students are built for the typical academic structure of school. They're not all built for the typical academic game of school, if you will. But when they come into a shop class or a kitchen or, you know, a computer science lab, they feel different because it is different. It's meant to be different. It's meant to give them a different sense of where they are in the school environment. So to have them be able to walk into that environment and provide them with that option, it's pretty incredible to see. And then I would also say across CTE, we also have something called Career Technical Student Organizations, which is kind of like sports for CTE. So we have various different groups. We have a group called HOSA, which focuses on health professions. We have a group called Skills USA, which focuses on a variety of different skills. We also, people my age might remember groups like FBLA, Future Business Leaders of America, or FFA, Future Farmers of America. They're not called that anymore. All that is to say, these groups provide students with the opportunity to exercise their skills and pit what they've learned against students from other schools.
Mm.
So as we're entering the months of March and April, we're actually going to have students from across the state come here to Reno. If you're ever down at the row in late April and you see students running around in red jackets all over the place, that's because they're at the Skills USA State Conference. So you have students from all over our state, especially our rurals, but as well as Clark, obviously, being able to come together and exercising their skills and what they've learned in real-time competitions with other students.
Huh.
And that's really, really engaging and provides an extra layer of belonging and engagement for our students outside what they would typically be learning in the classroom. So that's really important to note as well.
Yeah, I host DJ Trivia, and my boss's son goes to AACT or did go to AACT in the culinary program.
Oh, and
one of the things that she's talked about is they've gone on, I think they did go to like a national competition last year.
Yep.
And the competitive part is something that she gets really excited about, that her son gets really excited about. And the level of kind of engagement seems like something that, you know, we frequently would just associate with sports.
Yes.
So do you think that the kind of the team building and the competitiveness and that element of it, is that something that gets kids actually engaged and interested in a way that like taking a test obviously would not?
100%. We have many of our teachers who are very, very engaged and supportive of their CTSO chapters, their advisors. So many of our teachers on their own time, they volunteer their own time to work with their students. And then on the student side, yeah, we will have students who stay with the program because they love participating in that CTSO. They also, like you said, that student from AACT probably got to travel, if I'm thinking correctly, they probably got to travel to Washington, D.C. for a culinary event. It might have been called Pro Start.
Yeah, I think
Yeah. So if that was Pro Start, then they got to go to Washington, D.C. They got to travel, you know, the nation. Students across all of our CTSOs, if they qualify at the state level, they will get to go to national level competitions. That's an important resource that our department provides to our students. If they qualify for those national level competitions, we really try to do our best to provide funding support so the students can travel the nation and go to places like Orlando or Atlanta or Anaheim. So they're not only getting to, you know, exercise and put to the test what they've learned in the classroom, but they're also getting to meet students, young people, young adults from all over the nation. And oftentimes, many of our students have never traveled before. So it's their first time traveling, get in and out of town. So all of that is to say, it's a really, really important and special extra component of CTE that not a lot of people might know about.
Yeah. The targeted students for programs like this, is it obviously they're high achieving students who are geared for college, who are ambitious and want to do more from, you know, from the minute they hit high school. And then there's also in traditionally, I think some of the, you mentioned the shop classes and those things where it was students who didn't thrive in a traditional academic environment and the technical part was something that was a path for them. Can you talk a little bit about those? Are those two different categories of student? How do you make space for students who thrive in a traditional academic environment and want more? And also a space for students who maybe don't thrive in a, you know, traditional academic environment. What does that look like when all of those students come together?
It's a great question. I would say one of the best representations of that kind of mix and that diversity of a student body would be our military science programs. So back in the day, we had JROTC programs in high schools. We still have those programs. And in the last few years, they've actually all come under the CTE umbrella. So JROTC under CTE is called military science. And I feel like that really represents a good example of a CTE program where students come together from all sorts of diverse backgrounds and are given a place to intermix and succeed collectively. I can speak from experience. My student, my oldest daughter, she entered into a military science program last year. And she was exposed to students from all different walks of life who had all different types of levels of interest in education and academic aptitude and all sorts of different plans for after high school. And you put them together and good things happen. I mean, personally, I just believe anytime you can put students from diverse backgrounds together and put them in a place where they have to work together to collectively succeed, you're going to see magic happen. And I think that happens across a lot of our different programs. I will be candid and say that some of our programs are more built for students who are on a college track. I would say particular programs that come to mind would be like our engineering programs, our biomedical programs, those kinds of programs that lead to careers where typically the next step is a four-year college or a four-year university. Mm-hmm. But then we also have programs that, again, lend themselves to students who have all sorts of different plans and levels of interest in school. Again, military science especially comes to mind. We have programs, I would say, such as sports medicine that tends to draw a diverse background of students, computer science especially. Mm-hmm. We've had a couple of schools in the past that are still doing it that have adopted a computer science for all model where when students enter in their freshman year, they're automatically opted into computer science. They have to actively opt out. And that has yielded some interesting results with students deciding to remain in computer science, students who might not necessarily have been interested at any level in computer science, but because they are provided that opportunity up front and it's highly encouraged, that can yield some pretty cool things for students in high school.
Yeah. That actually brings me to the next question that I was going to ask, which is that for, I think, a hot minute, everyone was supposed to be a coder, right? Like every job, the entire future is you have to do computer science, you have to be a coder. It doesn't matter. Everything else is going away, right? Mm-hmm. How do you, and I don't think that's actually come true, right? There's a lot of jobs that are not coding. And also not everyone can or wants to code. Mm-hmm. So can you talk a little bit about kind of trends in career education and how you make sure that you are actually training students on not just things that seem like they might be the future, but things that are jobs we need right now and jobs that will be around for a long time. Mm-hmm. How do you kind of gauge what gets priority or what gets attention as far as these future careers?
That's a great question. Speaking back to your computer science example, it's especially been interesting to see, obviously, the explosion of AI in the last, I'd say, 18 months. I think that's really kind of recalibrated our perspective on technology. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you hear in the news about people being laid off from tech companies as, you know, the salad days of tech companies are kind of on more of a decline at this point. I would say in terms of computer science and cybersecurity, which is still running pretty strong in our district, what we try to push in those high technology, highly skilled type subject areas is teaching students different ways of thinking and how to critically problem solve. I would say one of the things, just speaking for our computer science teachers, one of the things that I think that they would say especially is they're not just teaching students how to code, they're teaching them how to problem solve and how to think critically, which is something we want for all of our students. So that's just for that. But in terms of how, back to your question of how do we kind of stay ahead of the curve to make sure that we're offering students program options that lead to, we call them high skill or in demand or high wage occupations, it's a bit of a mix. I would say the more that we consult our labor market information for locally the Washoe, Reno Sparks metropolitan area, the more we find that the industries are still the same that have a high level of need, meaning areas like construction, manufacturing, business, health science. Many of these different industries are industries that are not likely to change anytime soon. And one of the things that we consistently hear from business and industry is that, yes, we continually need a workforce in those core areas because those industries are, you know, ultimately what are necessary to sustain a community. Mm-hmm. So we're always going to come back to our labor market information. We're going to come back to our databases to make sure that we're making good, sound decisions, especially when we're looking at establishing programs that require a high level of resourcing and equipment. So we check our information. We try to be as data-informed as possible. But then sometimes we will have a school or a principal come to us and say, hey, you know, we've been surveying our students and they're really interested in offering a forensic science program. And we have a science teacher who's properly licensed and can teach it, we'd really like to go for it. Forensic science is not one of our most in-demand occupations in the community, but we know that it's inherently interesting to kids because they have said that they're interested in taking it. We have a teacher on the ground who's interested in doing it. We have a facility that's able to accommodate that class, and we're going to go for it because, quite frankly, it's not always about, you know, chasing a trend or the labor market. Oftentimes, it's about what's going to interest kids and especially what is the teacher side of it? And do we have a teacher who's able to teach it? So it's a bit of a balancing act. I would say it's about 50-50 between trying to make sure that our local and regional workforce has what it needs. But then sometimes, again, you're going to have kind of those one-off programs where it just makes sense to do it because it's fun and dynamic and it's going to interest our students.
Can you expand on that a little bit more about kind of the value of learning for the sake of learning, about pursuing things that are interesting and engaging? Because obviously, with your programs, there is a focus on the future and on careers. Mm-hmm. But to be single-minded about, oh, everything I do has to be for a career focus, doesn't seem necessarily that healthy for adults or for young people. So can you talk a little bit about just the, you know, the enjoyment of learning and how these programs kind of fit into that?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say just personally, one of the highest values that our programs can provide is, again, that sandbox piece, just providing our students with the ability to explore. So I would say one of the ways that that translates is in the first year of our programs, especially, we try to push industry tours as much as possible. They used to be called field trips. They're field trips, but with a purpose. So we'll take students to, say, for example, Renown Hospital or Northern Nevada Medical Center, and our sports medicine or our biomedical teachers, they will take them on a tour of the hospital and they will introduce them to various departments and members of the staff. The staff will be great and show them the everyday things that they do. And it's just a really great experience for our students. We try to push that early on because then by the time that they're later, if they decide to stay with a program, that's when we're trying to get them more intensive experiences like internships or job shadows or industry recognized credentials and things like that. But going back to your question, yeah, I would say one of the highest levels of value that our programs can provide our students with is just that ability to just get out there and see what's out there. As we know, there's so many jobs and occupations that our students can't even conceive of just because they haven't been exposed to them. So if there's any opportunity for a teacher to take a student to a worksite and show them that they don't just, you know, treat the sick at a hospital, but they also have somebody who works in financial records, and they also have somebody who works in a lab processing blood, or they also have somebody who works in physical therapy in a hospital. Anytime we can expose students to those kind of more unknown regions of career paths, absolutely something that we want to continue to emphasize. We know that students are liable to change their careers, you know, 3, 4, 5 times in their lives. I don't have the exact statistics in mind, but we know that what a student enters into when they're 18 or 20 or 22 is not necessarily what they're going to continue to be doing when they're 40. Mm-hmm. It's definitely not something that I'm doing now, even in education, and I've stayed in pretty much the same industry all this time. So again, kind of taking that pressure off and keeping that balance between providing our students with a path. If they have a clear path in mind, we want to do what we can to bridge that gap and make sure that they're able to take the next steps after high school. But at the same time, again, a big win for us is just putting kids out there and seeing what's out there and showing them what they might not normally be exposed to via typically their friends and family.
Yeah. I have some questions about like Washoe County specifically and kind of the way that schools work here. But you mentioned your career and kind of how you've come to, you know, you've worked in education for a long time. And I always like to learn more about the guests themselves on the show. So tell me a little bit about how you got into education. Have you always wanted to be a teacher? What was your kind of career path that brought you into education and then to what you're doing now?
So education for me is a deeply personal story. I would say probably the same as it is for many educators, many teachers. I grew up in a household that didn't have a lot of financial stability. And I didn't really know what I wanted to do after I graduated high school, but I knew that I loved school. And I knew that I had a couple of teachers that were just amazing human beings. I had a sixth grade teacher who was a male, who was a male role model for me. And then I had a teacher I took 3 different classes from him in high school. He was a chemistry teacher, and he was also a fantastic role model for me. So as I was kind of deciding what I wanted to do after high school, I thought to myself, hey, you know, 2 of the best people I know were teachers. I love school. I love learning. It kind of makes sense. So when I started college, I had a pretty good idea of what I wanted to do once I graduated. So I started off working as a high school teacher at North Valleys High School. I loved social studies. I love history. So I taught social studies at North Valleys. I didn't teach history. I taught geography, but I worked there for 4 years as a teacher and decided that I wanted to keep continuing with my education and got a master's. I'd already been a teacher, so I wanted to try something new for my education. So I got a master's in ed leadership. And then from there, just different paths started to open up that provided me with the ability to get into leadership. I started as a dean at North Valleys. I worked there as 3 years, which is kind of like a developing administrator, if you will. And then I got an assistant principal position at McQueen High School. I worked at McQueen for 4 years as an assistant principal. And then a position opened up at our Career Technical Academy at AACT. And I went for that and saw firsthand all the amazing opportunities and engagement that CTE provides students working at a CTE school. I had already had a fair degree of exposure to CTE working at McQueen because McQueen has CTE programs, but you know, AACT, given that that's their sole focus all the time, really got an idea of the power of CTE to provide that kind of ideal pairing between academics and career preparation. And then I would say about less than a couple of years during my stint at ACT, the position as director of this department of CTE for the school district opened up. And I've been working in this capacity since 2019. And it's been a pretty remarkable career path. Definitely blessed to be able to work with not just the people on my team, but one of the things that we get to do in our department is work with all sorts of other various departments and teams across the school district. You definitely get a broad sense of all of the various pieces that work together to make our school district run.
Yeah.
And it's pretty daunting and pretty incredible.
Yeah. Working at the district level, do you think that you have kind of like just a bigger perspective than when you were working in individual schools? Obviously, you worked in different schools and in different capacities, mm-hmm. but now being at the district level and seeing kind of the bigger picture, has that been, you know, eye-opening or enlightening about kind of how the whole big thing is?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, so first off, obviously, you know, our school district is one of the largest school districts in the nation. You know, we have just over 61,000 students last time I checked. So to be able to see the huge apparatus of various teams that really, really care about kids and families and serving students and families and all the various ways that they interact and work together has been really, really tremendous to be able to see. If there is one thing that I've continued to try to grow in my capacity as a director, is it's helping to support our department to work with other departments and collaborate. You know, the message across our district for the last couple of years now has been to, you know, we all need to do what we can to collaborate and make sure that we're not in our silos. And I think we're doing a pretty good job of that. But in terms of the teams that we work with on a regular basis, we work with counseling, we work with the special education department, we work with family school partnerships. There's a lot of amazing teams in the school district. And then to be able to work with local nonprofits and local business and industry groups, there's just a lot of amazing resources in this community that are all trying to do right by students and their families. And that's a perspective that you would never be able to have in a school because you're doing the work of a school in the everyday.
Mm-hmm. So you've been in this role for, you said, since 2019. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting period to be overseeing things, especially it seems like these programs are very in-person intense, right? Like mm-hmm. there's a lot of equipment, a lot of the stuff that you were doing, you can't weld on Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
So can you talk a little bit about what it's been like for you in this role over the last few years with all of the kind of unique challenges, I would say, of this period?
Yeah, I would say first and foremost, our teachers did nothing short of a heroic job trying to keep their kids engaged, their students engaged, and providing them the support, whatever support they were able to do virtually. We had students, you know, we had teachers trying to find video resources for our students to watch demonstrations online. We had teachers doing live demonstrations online for their students. We had teachers working up assignments and projects for our students to be able to demonstrate their skills back on a camera, back to their teachers. It was hard, you know, the same as across the entire nation and across the, you know, our entire educational system, both here and, you know, across the nation. For me, because I started really officially in this role in the fall of 2019. So, you know, my first year, half of it was in the shutdown. So because I didn't really know anything kind of different, you know, I started as a pandemic departmental, you know, administrator. And then from there, things just kind of improved after that. But yeah, it was definitely a difficult transition. And I credit nothing short of our teachers and our counselors and our administrators and just doing what they could to stay in contact with their students. It was amazing.
Yeah. Tell me about, what are the Signature Academies? What's the difference between the Signature Academies and the CTE program more broadly? Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yes. So it can be a bit complex, but I will try to give you the 30,000 foot view. So Signature Academies were developed, it's going on about, I'd say over 10 years ago now, as a way to provide kind of a thematic identity to each of our schools and a way to kind of group various CTE programs together into more of a theme. And it was also especially developed as a way to provide students with the ability to access CTE programs outside of their school zone. So this was in a day when variances were fairly rare, and we didn't have our current variance policy of students being able to select the school that they want to attend outside of their zone. So this was primarily a mechanism for families to be able to say, you know, if you go to school, say in Spanish Springs High School, but you really want to access an amazing, well, it wouldn't have been this at the time, but you want to access an amazing engineering program at, say, Galena High School, you could apply for a signature academy and you could get what's called a signature variance, and you could come out of the Spanish Springs zone and go to Galena High School and be one of their signature academy students. A challenge or a barrier, if you will, of that system is that students still need to provide their own transportation by and large. AACT is different to add more complexity. AACT is a signature school, so the entire school is made up of signature academies. But a wonderful strength of that school is that transportation is provided. We have buses all over the district that provide students transportation to AACT.
Okay.
And then we have another school coming in online in 2025-26, Debbie Smith, that will also provide transportation for students as well. So that'll drastically expand the accessibility to our CTE programs. But to go back to your question, essentially, it's a way to provide kind of a thematic identity to each of our schools. So for example, one of the signature academies that comes first and foremost to mind would be the Red House Project at Reno High School. The Red House Project started out as a clustering of multimedia CTE programs. So it was their graphic design, their video production, their animation program. And they had those three CTE programs, and those were the Red House Project, still is the Red House Project to this day, but that was their signature academy. So students from 75% of students within a school, they have rights to attend that school first and foremost. And then our general policy has been 25% of the seats are reserved for students to be able to access from outside of their zone. So we have signature academies at every single one of our schools, with the exception of Incline. Incline doesn't have a signature academy, and that's really related to kind of their geographical distance from the rest of the school district. But signature academies are really, again, a way to provide that distinct signature or that thematic structure in each of our schools. So examples of our signature academies would be, again, the Reno Red House Project. We have the Reed High School, their Enterprise Project. We have the Health Sciences Academy, Health and Human Services Academy at Hug High School. We have AACT, which is all signatures. We have the Worcester International Baccalaureate Program. We have the Damani Ranch Performing Arts Center Academy. We have the North Valleys High School Center for Agricultural Science and Engineering. So all of these various schools have a signature academy. But then in addition, they also have other CTE programs that are non-signature as well. Mm. But ultimately, the intent of signature academies, again, was to kind of raise the profile, provide a level of cohesion at our various schools, and then really hammer at that accessibility piece, providing our students with options to be able to access schools across the district.
Yeah. The thing you mentioned about having to provide transportation, is that a challenge for creating equitable access to these programs? You hear this argument about charter schools a lot too, mm-hmm. where it's like, maybe there's vouchers or whatever that, oh yeah, that might help students go, but if they can't afford to actually get there, mm-hmm. then the only students who are really benefiting are the ones who have the ability to get there. Mm-hmm. How do you as a district kind of deal with the challenges of, again, these are schools that are all over the entire area? So how do you deal with the logistics of making sure that students who want to get to the academies or the programs they want to have that access? If, you know, if this signature academy is at a school that is so far away, mm-hmm. how do you address that, or how do you work on that?
It's a great question. It is a barrier, and it's continually raised as a challenge by some of our families to be able to access our signature academies. There's kind of a two-pronged approach that occurs to me that might be the best way to go about it. Number one is, we're continually trying to provide various options at our high schools so that they, you know, they might not have access to an engineering program, but they may have access to a metalworking program or a construction program or some kind of a program that might be adjacent to what they're interested in, mm-hmm. provided that they're not able to provide their own transportation. Unfortunately, we are continually going to have those challenges where students are just, for whatever reason, not able to provide their own transportation to other school sites. So that's the one pronged approach, is to just continually expand the breadth of the CTE programs that we offer at our high schools. Very few of our CTE programs are one-offs at our schools. We typically have various multiples of programs at our schools. So for example, we have a military science program at every single high school with the exception of AACT. We have computer science programs at most of our high schools. I'd say about a good third of our schools offer medical programs. Another third of our schools offer manufacturing programs. Approaching about half of our programs offer either construction or metalworking. So we have not only a lot of options, but we have a lot of repeat options at schools. And then another way that we're working to address that would be, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention it, the opening of the W. Smith Career and Technical Academy in a couple of years now. So that school is going to house anywhere from, I want to say, in the mid eight to the mid 900 students. AACT currently serves about 600 students. So that school is going to vastly expand the amount of offerings that our students are going to be able to have access to above and beyond AACT, and it's going to provide transportation. Mm-hmm. So that's obviously a multi-million dollar investment from the school district that's going to drastically expand accessibility for our students across our region. And again, that school is going to have the same programs that really provide our students with connections to our local and regional economy. So it's going to have a practical nursing program. It's going to have a construction program. It's going to have an engineering and manufacturing program. It's going to provide all of those various programs that really resonate with our region. And again, students who attend it are going to have transportation from across our district.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Tell me more about the local and regional needs. You talked about the needs of our region, and you know, every city is different. Reno is growing in different ways than other cities are. Mm-hmm. So what are the kind of focuses for the Reno area for people who want to come out of these academies or these programs and mm-hmm. get jobs here in Northern Nevada?
So I would say the industries that loom large across our local and regional economy are kind of those mainstays across many other communities. So we have the health science industry, which is pretty heavily in need of not just doctors, but nurses, lab techs, community healthcare workers, those types of occupations. The manufacturing industry plays pretty heavily in our local industry. We have manufacturing programs at several of our school sites. Also, the construction industry is always, you know, perennially heavily in need. So we do have a fairly robust offerings of construction programs at various of our schools, hospitality and tourism, namely culinary arts. We have culinary arts programs at the majority of our schools. So I would say between the business industry, the human services industry, education, teaching and education, construction, health science, manufacturing, again, kind of those core industries that you might see across various other communities, especially those that are our size, those are the highest in need of a workforce that we continually try to tailor our programs to make sure they align with their needs.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier kind of the cost of some of these things where they're more resource heavy, there's more equipment, there's just more that needs to go into them. Can you talk a little bit more about that as far as these programs? I mean, clearly there's a cost benefit analysis, and when you're investing money, you mm-hmm. sometimes get a lot more for what you're investing. Mm-hmm. Can you just talk about the cost of these programs? And, you know, Nevada is a traditionally underfunded education state. We mm-hmm. hear a lot about the lack of money in our system. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about how the decisions are made on where to spend money and the benefits that you get from it and the understanding of where money goes in schools as it relates to these kind of programs?
Mm. Great question. So I would say first and foremost to know that for career and technical education, the primary funding apparatus behind everything that is CTE is called Perkins. It goes back to the 80s, the Carl D. Perkins Act of 1984. There's been five successive reauthorizations of the law since then. We're now in what's called Perkins 5. And that Perkins law provides the regulatory framework for defining what CTE is, and it also provides the framework by which all CTE is funded by the government across our nation. So there's a layer of federal funding that we receive, the same as any other school district, and then there's also a layer of state funding that we receive from the Nevada Department of Education. But really, that state funding, again, goes back to Perkins. So the first layer of funding support through the government is through state and federal funding sources. And that funding is based on an allocation basis. It's based on a per head. So the number of students in our programs, we receive X amount of dollars from the government. And then we distribute that funding to programs that are either most in need or new programs. So In addition to state and federal funding, there's also startup funding that's available from the state. It's called competitive funding. So the state, if you're looking to start up a new program, you apply to the state, you justify why the program is needed, how it aligns with our local and regional economy, and then you're competing with other various school districts across the state. It's a competitive process. And if you're able to make your case well enough, and if there's enough funding available, you'll be able to receive additional funds that way. In terms of how we decide to allocate funds and how we decide to which programs are going to be new, it's complicated. Every year, our teachers in our programs, they will invariably have curriculum needs, they'll have equipment needs, they'll have facility update needs. So we have an application process wherein they communicate their needs to our department, and then we leverage the state and federal funds that we receive to allocate them as best we can, as equitably as we can across our schools. When we're looking at new programs, the first thing that we will look at is our facilities in place. Do we have adequate facilities that are able to sustain a program? Examples of highly resource-intensive programs that would require a significant amount of facilities consideration would be like an automotive program or a manufacturing program or a metalworking program. If a school doesn't necessarily have that kind of shop environment in place already, then it's just not something that we're going to be able to do without a significant amount of capital funding, capital improvement support from the school district. So all that is to say, it's complicated. We look at our state and federal funds that are available. We look at competitive funds. We look at the facilities. We look at, does the school have a teacher who's adequately licensed in place? How difficult is it to get a teacher? If we have anybody in the manufacturing industry or the automotive industry who are going to listen to this podcast, please apply to the school district. We can always use manufacturing and automotive teachers, construction teachers, those very, very highly skilled professions. It's very, very much of a challenge to be able to get those teachers as well. So there's a variety of different factors that we look at when we're looking at either establishing new programs or supporting our programs that are already in place. And ultimately, you know, I'd say the same as any other school district, especially in Nevada, we're all trying to do the best we can to make our dollars stretch as far as they can go to provide as much service as we can to as many students as we possibly can. And then on top of that, we also are continually always on the lookout for funding sources from nonprofits or business and industry partners. I'll give you a really great example. Recently, we've had a pretty long-standing corporate partnership with Intuit, the same company that does TurboTax, for a variety of different reasons. But one of the things that we were able to secure from them recently was a brand new food truck that's valued at about $269,000. That was donated from them, and we established it at Reed. And we established it at Reed for a variety of different factors in mind, but ultimately it came down to the teacher who was really highly experienced and highly interested in doing this particular model of CTE. It's called Simulated Workplace. Mm-hmm. And we received that significant resource via our corporate partnership. So we're always on the lookout for community support. We've also historically received support from groups like the Washoe K-12 Ed Foundation. We just recently received a grant from Google to provide computers for our STEM labs in our middle schools. So the phrase pulling rabbits out of hats is something that comes to mind when we're always on the lookout for either looking for new sources of funding or trying to braid sources of funding together, again, to provide as much value as we can for our schools.
You mentioned the staffing challenges, and hearing all of these different programs and all of these different things, when I traditionally have thought of teachers in the past, there's only a handful of different types of teacher. You know, you need an English teacher and a science teacher, and, you know, the science teacher can maybe teach a few different types of science. But when you're talking about very specialized training, can you talk a little bit about the challenge of recruiting and hiring and staffing for, you know, teachers who really need to have certain specialties or certifications or, you know, knowledge themselves to be able to teach these things?
Mm-hmm. It is a daunting challenge, especially for many of our programs, like I mentioned before, where to be able to walk into a manufacturing classroom and to be able to run what is essentially a miniature assembly line to teach students how fabrication and automation and a certain level of coding and robotics works, to be able to have somebody be able to walk into a classroom with that, at least that foundational level of knowledge and experience is very, very difficult. Again, pulling rabbits out of hats is the phrase that comes to mind. So we have a couple of amazing CTE coordinators in my office who handle the bulk of the recruitment piece. And then they partner with our amazing human resources and talent acquisition team in the school district. And oftentimes it's about pounding the pavement. It's about utilizing our informal friend networks if we know that somebody's looking to make a career pivot. It's our HR team going to job fairs, getting out in the community, leveraging social media like Indeed or LinkedIn even, you know, putting as many feelers out there into the community as possible to be able to recruit is pretty crucial. And then fortunately, you know, every time we have an opening, fortunately, I'll knock on wood if there's any available. But by and large, our team and our HR team, they do an amazing job of being able to get qualified people in the classroom. But all that is to say, it is a challenge. It's difficult. Mm. And then on top of it, once you have somebody come in who is interested in teaching, providing what we can, whatever level of support we can for the licensure process, working with the Department of Education, working with our own HR department, it's a lot that we ask our new teachers to take on, coming from oftentimes business and industry environments where things might have been a bit simpler. And then they're walking into an environment that's highly complex. And then they got to work with young people, and then they got to work with families, and then they got to work with other teachers and administrators. It's enough to make your head spin, but fortunately, we have people who enter the classroom who are highly dedicated, and it just comes back to that idea that they want to share what they've learned along the way, and they're looking for a change in their lives, and we just endlessly benefit from it. We have people come in from the manufacturing industry, like I already mentioned. We have people come in from the automotive industry. We have people come in from the health sciences industry, and these people are saints on earth. Just the level of work that they provide our students and the level of patience and engagement that they exert with their students, it's really quite amazing to see. To say nothing of our military science instructors who, you know, were working as colonels or pilots or lieutenant colonels or majors in all branches of our armed services, for them to come from a place where they were, you know, literally commanding men and women in, you know, life or death situations or protecting our country, and then to come back and be able to provide to our students and work with our students and teach them about, you know, what it is to be a leader and a citizen. It's pretty awe-inspiring to see.
What did we miss? What else do you want people to know about the programs that you operate, about the Washington County School District? I always feel like an hour is never enough for these for these conversations, but what did we miss? What do you want people to take away from this conversation?
I would say if there's anything I would like people to take away from this conversation, it's that CTE is a lot bigger than a lot of people might have conceptions about. We offer a lot of different options across our schools. And in terms of ultimately what we're trying to prepare our students for is just various options, different career paths, different educational paths. We are not all in the corner of college only, and we are not all in the corner of no college. We're a big tent. We're a big umbrella. If anybody's interested, they can go to washoeschools.net/SACTE, or they can go to washoeschools.net/CTE programs, and they can learn a lot of in-the-weeds information about all the various programs and options that we provide. If we have anyone who's interested in coming into the classroom and taking up the cause of being a career and technical educator, please feel free to reach out to our department. We're always on the lookout for, you know, people who want to do right by kids. We're pretty well staffed, but we always love to have a name and a phone number or an email address on file because you never know what could happen.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. I try to do education episodes fairly regularly. I've had folks from the school board. I've had teachers. I had the head of the Washoe Education Association Union last year, or maybe the year before. So I know that education is such a front and center topic for so many people, right? Like whether you have kids in schools or not, it really does affect kind of how our community develops and changes and what's going on here. So I appreciate both the work that you're doing, of course, and for coming on the show to talk about it. Again, big part of this show is just educating people about things that are happening in the community. And I think to kind of demystify what CTE is and what these programs actually look like really does help people have a better picture of, you know, what our Washoe County education system actually provides and actually looks like. So I appreciate you taking the time. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's my pleasure to be here. And thank you, Connor. And happy CTE month to everybody. I forgot to mention February is CTE month. So this is absolutely appropriate.
This season of Renoites, as a bonus for patrons of the show, I'm including bonus segments from most of our episodes. On this episode, Josh and I talked a little bit longer, this time about some of the political questions facing our school district. We talked about the legislative session from last year, what that means for career and technical education, for teachers, raises, more money that makes a difference in our school system. We also talked about the politicization of our school boards. Obviously, school boards are in the news. There's a lot of focus on who is on school boards, what they are prioritizing. And we also talked about the superintendent search. If you have lived in Northern Nevada for a while, you know that there seems to be an almost annual search for a new superintendent as they come and go and come and go. We talked a little bit about the current search for the superintendent, what Josh would like to see from superintendent prospects, and more. This segment is only for patrons of the show, but here's a little sneak peek at just part of it. If you want to hear the whole segment, that's available for all patrons at any level. Again, patreon.com, patreon.com/renoites to learn more and listen now. We're recording this in the interim between losing our past superintendent and selecting our new superintendent. Can you talk a little bit about how that affects what happens with the academies and with the career and technical education? How much influence or importance does the superintendent have on how these things go? And we've seen a lot of turnover in our superintendents for a long time now. This seems to be the new normal that we have a lot of turnover there. Can you talk a little bit about the, you know, you're the director of this program, but there's also leadership from above, from both the school board and the superintendent. Can you talk about how those pieces that are, you know, even a step above you influence how things happen in the district and what you'd like to see from them?
I would say the biggest sea change that I've seen in my few years as the director that are immediately evident from whoever's at the top in the top position, one of the biggest sea changes that we've seen in CTE and especially across signature academies has been that pivot to having all of our schools available to students living outside of their respective zones. So in the past, we had signature academies where we had a fairly intensive application process, and there were a number of qualifications that students had to be able to demonstrate to be able to be eligible to access our signature academies. And by and large, that process has largely been minimalized, and those qualifications have gone away. So when we talk about accessibility to our programs, we are going to have a layer or a level of accessibility that we really haven't had before. And that really comes back to who's in that position making those decisions. So
again, that was just a sneak peek of the bonus segment from this week's episode of Renoites. If you want to hear the rest of that, you can learn more at patreon.com/renoites. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode, and special thanks to my guest, Josh Hartzog from the Washoe County School District. Appreciate him taking the time to come on the show and educate us about education. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Again, if you have feedback, you can email me, Connor, C-O-N-O-R, at renoites.com. And as always, help spread the word about this show. Word of mouth means everything for a project like this. Sharing posts on social media, you don't even have to comment on it. Just hit the share button on Facebook or Instagram and hit OK. That lets this show reach so many more people than I can normally. So thank you for liking, commenting, sharing, doing all the stuff that helps the algorithm, and for listening. Be sure you subscribe on your podcast app of choice so that you don't miss any episodes. Again, we have some fantastic guests coming up next week on the podcast. Former city councilman and CEO of the Community Health Alliance, Oscar Delgado, joins us on the show. Another really great episode about his experience working in healthcare and with the city. Again, that is next Tuesday. New episodes out every Tuesday. We'll see you then.